Coca-Cola Company, Keurig Dr. Pepper, and PepsiCo are bringing consumers more choices with less sugar than ever before. From sparkling flavored and bottled waters to zero sugar sports drinks, teas, and sodas, consumers are taking advantage of these choices. In fact, nearly 60% of beverages sold contain zero sugar. To learn more, visit balanceus.org.
Know anything about this world of obstacle racing? Have you heard of it at all? Spartan racing or anything?
Yeah. I did one mud run long time ago in San Diego.
Okay. They have like the original mud run in San Diego, or they have the marine one in San Diego. I can't remember. It's a big one.
Yeah. No, it was enormous. Yeah. Tons of people got really muddy, like all of the things. I think it was only 10K, so like 6 miles total, but you know, the miles were incredibly tough miles with like all the things in between. But yeah, I went out there and did it with one of my closest friends.
Right. So they have a huge one out there. I think was it at Camp Lejeune?
Yeah, it was somewhere, definitely at a military base.
It was somewhere. So
I have a great memory.
So they have one, clearly. So they have, do you have kids?
I do. Okay. Four. Okay. So that's my
all right.
Reasoning.
We have a lot to talk about. I have three. Oh. They have sucked all my brain power. I remember nothing.
Every ounce.
I used to know so much, like football. Like I would tell you all the Super Bowls and who the MVP was and where they played it. Like all that information is gone.
Mine is dates. I used to be really good at remembering birthdays and anniversaries. And like I can't even really tell you what my kids' birthdays are. Like it's terrible.
I have to think about the last one. And I used to judge that when people would like my wife's dad sometimes gets her day off by a day. Mm-hmm. And I totally get it, man. I have to do the math. Like when people say, how old are your kids? I finally started getting the third one. Well, the first two are in May. And so one's the 6th and one's the 23rd. And I usually get that. And then River is the littlest one. And I used to get that one wrong, but I finally figured it out. It's 9, 12, 13. So now I remember it. But I used to be like, is he August? Is he September? Like I couldn't remember.
Yeah. It's tricky. We have 6, obviously, with my husband. 2 April, 2 July, 2 December.
Right.
So at least like we got the months down. But yeah, the dates are always a little tricky.
Right. I know their names. Yeah. I know their middle names. That's what's important.
I know where to take them to school every day.
Right.
I know. Yeah. I know where to come home to.
All right. We will talk about that, because here's the thing. If you have as many or more kids as me, then we can talk, right? Okay. If you have less, then I'm morally superior to you because you don't know how hard my life is.
That's awesome.
Right?
Ours is split family. Does that matter?
No.
Okay.
Meaning two are his and two are yours?
Meaning two are both of ours, two are his. Yeah. So I'm a stepmom and
okay.
a mom.
No. You have
four kids.
You have to deal with the house.
Yeah.
Like you have to deal with that. You have to deal with that. Like, I mean, listen, we don't want to get political here, gosh darn it, this early, certainly. But it's like all the COVID stuff, right? And it's like, I'm not talking about the fake Instagram posting of how wonderful your life is. I'm just saying like on these Facebook groups, and it's like, well, my kid's doing great during COVID and she gets up and learns every day. It's like, well, good for you. We've got three and the boys don't sit still for 2 seconds. So no. F you. It's not happening. Mm-mm. Like those boys aren't learning. So please, can we go back to school?
Please, can we go back to school? Yeah. Yeah. We have all girls and it was really...
You have all girls.
All girls. It was really challenging for the oldest, who's in high school.
Right.
The virtual learning was just not working with her. Yeah. And, you know, the second oldest, she did great. But it is all about the individual. It has nothing to do with... Yeah. We don't have to get into that, but yes, I totally understand what you're talking about.
Okay, so that being said, so this mud run, the one you did, mm-hmm. and there were a couple of others that happened once a year, and since like 2008, 2010 maybe even.
Tough Mudder was one of them too, right?
Yeah. Well, so in 2011, Tough Mudder and Spartan were born.
Okay.
And this whole boom happened, right? And that's when I started doing it, and it's why for fun – I decided to do a podcast about obstacle racing, and then it took over my life. And so that's my job is okay. I'm the CNN or whatever of this world of obstacle racing. So
still today.
Yes.
That's amazing.
That's my job. So it started out.
Do you race?
I don't race. I run for fun. Okay. I have a couple of what we call A races a year that I try hard, but I'm sort of the everyman guy.
Okay.
Right. But I interview all the athletes and interview the race directors. And because the industry is so small, I sort of have to be like all of them. Like, I don't know. Do you follow sports at all?
Yeah.
Okay. So like, which sports do you follow?
Football for sure.
Right.
Baseball.
Okay.
Go Braves.
Okay.
Soccer. Love United. Like, you know, I'm an Atlanta girl.
Okay.
So,
right. And so in sports, you know, you've got like the breaking news guy and then you've got the commentary guy and then you've got like, and I've got to be all those people, which is right. So it's like any niche sport. Many people have not heard of it, but those that care about it, like live and die by it. And that's how a niche sport exists. Right. Yeah. Like when you're watching, you know, when you're watching these channels and you see some random thing you've never heard of, but they have sponsors and they have, you know, you're like, wow, how did this thing? Because people really care about it. So anyhow, so I was doing that I've been doing it 10 years now. So I was doing that about 7 years and I decided I really love talking to people. This is clearly very natural for me. So I thought, well, why don't I do something local? And so that's when I started the Atlanta podcast. And so
how long have you been in Atlanta?
So I grew up here.
Okay.
Left for 10 years, came back.
Where'd you grow up?
So I grew up in Marietta.
What high school did you go to?
Wheeler High School.
I went to Marietta.
Okay.
Yeah.
You weren't our real rivals, though. Was our real,
yeah,
real
that's
rival.
That's fair. That's fair. I feel like we had more rivalry with, like, oh my gosh, why am I blanking?
Sprayberry, Lassiter,
but there was one on like the West Cobb side. Starts with a C. Campbell, I think, was in the mix.
Right.
Yeah. Anyways. Marietta. Yeah. We're both Mariettans.
Well, we have a lot more in common that we're about to get to. So typically I do the whole LinkedIn thing and I hadn't done that with you until just now.
Oh.
And so you know, I'm pretty sure, I'm hoping you know somebody I really like really well, and that's Charleston.
Oh, Charleston.
Edwards. How many Charlestons are there?
Points
of Light?
Oh, yes, yes. So, thank you. Points of Light was a very short stint in my career. I was there for about 10 months.
Oh, okay.
So, I'm no longer there, obviously. It was a great experience. I was in the midst of finishing grad school.
How about Kaylee?
Kaylee, I don't know that I overlapped with Kaylee.
Sperling?
Jennifer, no.
Choi?
Hmm.
Kaylee, she got married. So those two people I know really well and for a really long time.
Okay.
And Charleston is probably one of the greatest people I've ever met.
Still at Points of Light?
He had his own thing. Like, I think he ran that and then kind of that became his own thing for nonprofits.
Okay.
But I'm telling you that, like, if I started a company tomorrow at zero and could hire, like, any, like, operations person, it would be him.
Yeah.
So I had a staffing company. That was my life before all this. I had a staffing company. We staffed trade shows and promotions. And we're going to be friends. I'm a bit of a lunatic. I'm an ideas guy, like that person, right?
Yeah.
Not a good manager of people, right?
Yeah.
You want Charleston. Great with details, great with people.
Sounds like I need to meet him.
He's pretty...
Or reconnect.
He's pretty awesome. He's in D.C. or Virginia now.
Okay.
And honestly, just everybody loves him. And... you're making me want, like, we've always stayed in touch just a little bit, but I was so excited because I was hoping you knew him, but that's okay.
Sorry to disappoint.
It's okay. I thought he was like all over that. I thought you couldn't not know him, but I forgot exactly what his role was.
I was very specifically working on the events team. So helping them curate their big trade show, essentially community gathering.
But that's what it is. That's what Points of Light is. It's an event. I texted him and said, do you know her? And I haven't heard back because I just looked it up. I must be getting old because I don't know who that is. Did she say she knew me?
Nah, there you go. Nope, but I would like to.
Because this is the beauty of podcasting. Hey, Charleston, I'm actually literally interviewing her right now. She was only there 10 months, and she said she didn't remember you either, and I was bummed out because I was telling her that you'd be the first hire at any company I ever started and that I love you. Okay, bye. He's the best.
What a nice message.
He's
going to love that.
He's like, you know the term mensch?
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's Charleston's like I'll give you a good example. Again, we'll just get real. Gosh, yeah, darn it. You have four kids, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. There is nothing that's not real in
like
your life.
I, especially back then, a little bit younger, a little less calm. I think kids help you with that a lot. But like this girl was late and I was like, we got to fire her. Like I was always like, if you can't be on time, you got to go. And he was like, Matt, let me talk to her. Cause I think she was late like 2 days in a row. And he's like, let me talk to her. He talked to her and she ended up being like the best person we had that weekend. And it was like, that's why you're here, Charleston. That's why you're here. Cause I'm a lunatic and you.
And I need someone to help wrangle and like just provide some sort of consistency and clarity.
And just not be a lunatic.
Yeah.
Just not be an emotional lunatic. Cause I'm a bit of that. Which is great for a certain, like I've started a lot of companies and some of them worked out and some of them didn't.
Yeah.
So anyway, so you weren't there that long, but okay. Do you know Chris at Sixth Man?
Chris's last name? Cause that is a very early.
Okay. Because I saw that one too. And I think he's still there. What is Chris's last name?
What does he do? Do you know? Okay. Chris.
Hang on. He actually has a little side project in OCR as well. Chris, what's your last name? And then I saw you. Oh, but I know a lot more people work there. What the hell is Chris's last name?
Yeah, so Sixth Man, I think now is up to like 50-ish people. When I left, we were about 30. I was there for almost 10 years.
Chris Lewis?
Oh, yes, I know Chris. Yes, I know Chris very well.
Okay, you never talked about Mud Runs?
No, he's very super active with them.
Yeah.
Yeah, we did several 5Ks together. We had a run club when I was at Sixth Man. We would all go running after work.
Right.
Chris Lewis was in it.
So it's funny because Chris actually started what's essentially my competitor in the obstacle racing world. Like there was like too big. We were like the, you know, I wouldn't say the CNN and the Fox because that sort of that gives you a certain feeling, but basically that.
Okay.
And but we were always good friends. And then his partner kind of started doing less. And so I'm kind of like the only one left standing in obstacle racing. Like they finally, because that's how most businesses like work. You know what I mean? So anyway, so see, we have so much in common.
Yeah, Chris Lewis. Aw. Now it makes me want to reach out to Chris and say hi.
I haven't talked
to him in a really long time.
I'll take a picture. We'll send it to him.
Okay. Perfect.
So. And then what was the other one? You started something?
I did. It was called Serve to Rock. So it was kind of combining my experience in the music industry with my passion for giving and serving in time and volunteering. And, you know, it was a great exercise. I had a lot of interest and good traction, had a really successful first event in February of, I guess that would have been 2014. Like made money, which was not the goal, but made money. Didn't lose everything I had on it. But it just, you know, it was challenging figuring out like a great business plan to support it. Because what I essentially was asking for was I was asking artists, musicians, to give me tickets
mm-hmm.
to their shows
mm-hmm.
and people could earn them by volunteering versus paying dollars.
Sounds like a great concept.
Great concept. The artists would give me shit tickets, right? Because that's what's left over. They're not going to give me the great tickets. And I wanted great tickets. I wanted people who couldn't afford
a
$300 ticket to go volunteer 30 hours and earn the ticket.
Right. And so busted their ass. And so you give them a good seat.
Right.
And so that's what happened.
But I had to offset that by sponsorship. And anyways, conceptually, it was really great.
I still think that could work.
Thanks. I think it could too. I just ended up, as I was after that successful event, was planning kind of a series of events for the rest of the year in 2015. I guess it couldn't have been that early. I'm getting my years. See, dates, they're really challenging for me. But then met this team at Newport. And so I kind of got all in on this idea and this project.
All right, we'll get into Newport, but I definitely want to talk about this because that's actually how the obstacle racing world works.
Tell me more.
You volunteer in the morning
mm-hmm.
and then you can race in the afternoon. Or you volunteer at race A and then you get to work race B for free.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how it works. So they get probably, I don't know, I'd have to ask them, but they get, when you're at a race And who better than to volunteer than people who do the race, yep. right? And so you'll get people who like love it. And you'll also get like some, you know, some kid or somebody that's never done one before. And they're like you go up, you thank them when you're at the water station, whatever. And you go, well, you're going to run. They're like, actually, I'm going to try it tomorrow. This is my first one. And so then they do it and they like it or they don't. Or, you know, you see parents yep. and kids doing it together. And it's a whole thing that's become sort of the lifeblood of that industry, is that most of the volunteers come from
actually racing.
Right.
Or the race community.
So I feel like the idea that you had could work. Like, I don't know, maybe the longer you do it or whatever, because I feel like they've got to have X amount of seats that they typically save for, you know, family or sponsors or whoever. And if they started sure. Xing out I mean, you're not talking front row, but just decent seats.
Good seats, yeah.
Right?
Yeah, decent seats.
And like building more relationship that you could end up getting, you know, and then eventually you'd get some amazing, like maybe backstage thing or whatever. But I mean, I'm just thinking out loud yeah. because this is how my brain works. But they just screwed you on that first event. They're like, here's crappy seats.
Well, no, and I had great partners in the music industry. I think so. There is that in the festival world, right? So if you think about Bonnaroo, they do have a mechanism where they need thousands of volunteers. So you can volunteer for Bonnaroo, then you get tickets to the shows after you volunteer. Like, there is that mechanism in place in the music industry. I think what I was searching for was, you know, how cool, who's your favorite artist?
Of all time?
Yeah. Just give me one that like...
The Beatles.
Okay. So if the Beatles are... This is impossible. If the Beatles were on stage performing, how great would it be if they could look out and there was like a section on the floor on the right that they were like, damn, those people volunteered 30 hours right, for our favorite organization.
Right, give them a little shout out.
Yeah, like all those people together, like those 50 people, that's 150, you know, whatever, hours right. that they donated.
Right. Well, let's do just Paul. Paul's still living. Paul still performs.
Yeah. Yep.
Paul and he's performs. And he's got like all kinds of causes, right? Mm-hmm. He loves the veggies and whatnot.
Yes. So my point was like, could you appeal to the artist hearts and have it be a cause that they were passionate about?
Right.
So that they knew that not only did they make money, but their show that night
right.
warranted X number of hours donated to a cause that they care about. Anyways, it was. I still think there's.
I want you to stick it out. I feel like I want you to stick
Thanks.
It out, and
Thanks.
Like whenever
you're reinvigorating the passion inside me.
Well, because I'm all about like do your own thing. I'm someone that like doesn't work well with other people, so I have to do my own thing, right? And so like that, it sounds like a great. What were you doing in the music industry before that?
Six Man. So I was there for about 10 years. We did music festivals. I was like one of the originals at Six Man. I joined them in 2004 and kind of grew up in my career there right. Under the then CEO named Andy Levine. And, you know, we had a great run. We grew the company. We went from one festival a year to 12 festivals a year. When
the
I
boats?
Left. The boats.
You know what I saw yesterday?
50. I think I was on 52 total before okay. I left.
So much to talk about. Do you know what I saw yesterday an ad for?
What?
Go on the waves with your favorite author, which is like to me like snooze fest, right? Like if you're going with rock bands or wrestling or, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like that's a thing.
Yeah.
This was like, hey, all you Sex and the City fans. I'm just not kidding. Like, go on the boat with what's her name?
And you're going to hear her speak and maybe read and answer questions.
And there were five or six of those. Like, if you don't like her, how about all you mystery fans? So it's like, I'm in a bunch of old spinsters on a boat. I mean, does that sound like a good time?
But not to me, but to some people it does. That's
am I insulting you?
No, but that's the beauty of what they do is like, there are so many concepts out there that
did
are
they all
not for me.
But they stole from Six Man, right? Six Man, didn't you guys create the whole cruise, the rock cruise thing?
I do believe that we were like the originators of this concept.
Okay, not to be like rude, but if you were early on, were they ever like, hey, you get a cut of the company kind of thing? Did those conversations ever happen?
I'll say Andy was very generous.
Okay.
And, you know, as the company grew.
It's not public, right?
So they ended up being purchased by Norwegian Cruise Line. And then Norwegian
wow.
went public. So wow. through those transitions, I'll say that Annie was very generous with the team that was in place.
Interesting. What about did any of the massive like IMG ticket, any of those guys ever come in and try to buy it?
They did. I mean, he had several conversations. I think the decision
the
was...
The evil people, they're all evil, right?
I don't think they're evil. I just think it was strategic play on his part to say, who do we want to partner with? Do we want to partner with... an entertainment mogul who kind of like dominates that world? Or do we want to partner with someone who's in the travel business and really, I mean, it's partnering with the place, right? So it happens to be floating in the ocean, but it's like Bonnaroo having their site. I mean, we just partnered with a person who has our site. And the good news is they have sites of all sizes all over the world. And so the growth trajectory or opportunity for
built in staff, built in food.
I mean, it just seems to make so much sense that we are aligned with them anyway.
As long as there's not a worldwide pandemic, I'm pretty sure they'll be okay.
Yeah, as long as that doesn't happen.
Did you watch?
We did survive.
Did you watch the documentary on the people stuck on that boat?
Oh my God. Like so many times, me and my husband both are like obsessed with how many things went wrong and all of the crazy decision making that went on in that time. I mean, it makes us both highly uncomfortable, but kind of in a way that we like can't stop watching it.
So you keep watching that documentary?
I think we've watched it 3 times.
Okay. Yeah. So my wife and I loved it.
Yeah.
What decisions did they like, can we break it down? Like other than maybe we should let some of these people off the boat.
I mean, I think they had zero infrastructure. They lied about where it was. They had zero infrastructure in place in the area that they were actually executing. And then their biggest mistake is that he just, as many people were telling him that it wasn't going to work, he never communicated that to anyone. He never believed it. I can't believe I'm blanking on his name. Kids. The guy who ran it all, who went to jail and... You know, are we talking about the same thing?
I don't think so. Are you talking about Firefest?
Yes. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about the people that were stuck on that cruise in China.
Oh, sorry. I thought you were talking about... No, but I need to watch that documentary.
Oh, my God.
That one I haven't watched.
No. Firefest is great. Firefest is a treat. Like, yeah. We've all watched... I've watched both documentaries, and I actually know some people. So
you went.
I did not go. No, I did not go. Did you ever... get into the Burning Man world at all?
Mm-mm.
Okay. Because I know there's some people that worked on that, anyway. I feel like he's in the same sort of category as the Theranos lady. Like, just like, we're going to do this and doesn't matter what's it called? I think it's called The Last Cruise.
The Last Cruise.
To see it.
Okay. Okay. I'm making a note for myself right now.
It's on HBO.
Okay.
It's pretty short. I think it's only an hour and like 20 maybe. Oh my God.
The Last Cruise.
And if it's not called The Last Cruise, I'm going to look it up while we're talking.
Movies.
Just type HBO or you're putting it.
Yeah, I'm putting it in my actual.
In your notes. Yeah. App. HBO Last.
Because I can't remember anything if I don't write it down.
No, I don't either.
And this way, when we're looking for something to watch, I just pull
chronicling the first outbreak of coronavirus outside China on the Diamond Princess cruise liner.
We did not watch that. Oh, fascinating. Now I know what we're doing.
Oh, tonight.
Tonight.
Tonight, you have to watch it.
Yeah.
It's on HBO.
Go to bed. Great.
So, so people were just like, it's bad. It was like, oof. Like we all like as bad as ever it was for all of us. Imagine being stuck in a fucking room. What do you call those things?
A cabin.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
Yeah. I'm not really
cabins without windows or balconies. Ooh.
Yeah. I'm not really a cruise guy. I'd never been on one my whole life until a Spartan actually put one on. No. My buddy had one where him and his family do one every year, and so we went. Our kids were little. We only had two of them. And that was like, it was okay. It was fun.
Yeah.
And then we went on one. Spartan did one. And Joe DeSena, the CEO of Spartan, he's kind of a lunatic. And like he gets on the boat. And so, you know, the boat is supposed to have like, you know, speakers and workouts. And you probably know all these freaking islands. I want to say Stirrup Cay.
Yeah. Great Stirrup Cay.
See, of course, you know all the islands.
Mm-hmm.
There was a race there.
Oh yeah.
I can show you a little video we made. It was great. You race there, get back in the boat, go back home.
Mm-hmm.
But when we first showed up, he couldn't believe, like, the boat was filled with people just eating and drinking their face off. And he couldn't believe it. It's like, dude, you don't know what a cruise is. Like, he imagined some, like, military boat, I guess, with, like, people, like, you know what I mean? He had no idea. It was really funny because he'd never been on a cruise. So it was very funny. He was horrified.
Oh.
Because, like, people just, you know, it's unlimited.
Unlimited.
Right.
We did one. I'm going to have to look it up for you. But it was a healthy experience, and it was hosted by this one particular woman, and I'm blanking on her name. Again, my memory is totally shot. But it was interesting. We had to work with the cruise line on completely redoing the menu, what they served, how much they served, what they like, no frozen drinks, like none of the sugary shit was allowed. Right. But she went through and completely wiped their menu.
There was no buffet?
There was buffet, but it was definitely different foods on the buffet, like no French fries.
Right.
I think they served things in the dining rooms with like without butter.
Wow.
It was a huge overhaul and work with the cruise line. Again, back to that partnership and why it was so important to make that successful. But it can be done. Healthy cruises can be done.
Right. So, yeah. So I saw this one. This one for, I forgot, it's got a weird name. I guess it was a sponsored ad. But yeah, there were several of these, like, I can't imagine this being a good time. Like, especially it's like, I mean, I guess if you see, who's the lady that wrote all the Sex and the City, whatever her name is, mm-hmm. if you see her speak one night, do you need to see her speak another night? I don't know. I just feel like it didn't seem cruise worthy. Like an appearance of one, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. I'm trying to think. So I used to be in a book club. Several of my book club members, fellow book club members, were in several book clubs. Like, they were bookies. They loved it. They would go to author readings locally.
Right.
They knew authors. They followed them. So, I don't know. Right. I feel like for some of those people, right. I could see.
I've been to a few in my life, and it was about, you know, it was about meeting the person.
Mm-hmm.
And they were all pleasant experiences now that I think about it. So, I lived in L.A., and when you live in L.A., stuff happens all the time. Like that's one of the few things I miss about LA is that, you know, here, if they come to whatever that shop in Midtown, it's not there anymore. Like, that'd be a thing.
Cover Books?
No. What was the place? It was there forever. Right there in the corner. And now it's gone. Blah, blah Books. Across from the breakfast place. Anyway, you'll think of it later.
Mm-hmm.
But like, you know, hey, like so-and-so is reading at the Skirball Center, or like there was always stuff going on. So like, so I saw and met George Carlin, who was one of my heroes. I saw John Stewart, but I think that was in Boston.
That would have been fun.
Anyway, I saw a few people, but like, I'm not like a let's go to a book reading kind of a guy.
Understand. I can't say that that's on the top of my entertainment.
Right. Okay. So how did we find ourselves with the Newport people?
So I got a phone call as I'm in the world of Serve to Rock, trying to keep this thing going.
It's a great name too.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Not taken before?
Not taken. Yeah. I still have the URL.
I was going to say, trademark that shit.
And I got a phone call from a great friend, disclaimer, she's actually my cousin, who has been in real estate marketing for a long time. So she worked for Jamestown, helped with Ponce City Market, Westside Provisions, just doing marketing events, and like loved what she was doing. And I always heard about it and was interested. So she called and she said, hey, April, I think I have someone I need you to meet. They're doing this really interesting, very complicated project in South Downtown. I just think it's something that you would really like to learn about, and they need someone waking up every day thinking about this work. And right now I'm a consultant and I can't wake up every day only thinking about their work. So she introduced me to, at the time, the president of the company. His name is Jake. And Jake and I met in South Downtown, did a couple block, maybe probably a couple mile walk from North Downtown to South Downtown, all around the blocks, which, to just place you, south of Five Points, MARTA station, in between Mercedes-Benz and the Capitol. And our south border is essentially Garnet MARTA station.
Right. And I know those really well because I run a lot.
Oh, yeah.
And my other part-time job, I started a race called Run the ATL.
Oh.
And it was born in 2015.
Okay.
Of, hey, the East Side Beltline is finished. The rest of the Beltline is not. So let's run on dirt and train tracks and whatever. And I thought maybe 10 of my friends would show up. And we had like 50 people at the first one. Wow. And then like moving forward, like 100 to 150 at the ones moving forward. And great. Each year they build more and more Beltline. So it kind of like becomes less fun for that reason.
Yeah.
And so the summer one always goes all the way around. And the winter one, we do different loops. And so I've sent them through like by the Capitol and by, and so, and I'm, because I live in the West End and I go for runs,
super cliffs.
Like I've run all that stuff. Yeah. Most people have no clue. I think
a lot of people have no clue.
Right. And that's that is true. Your job.
And that is my job. So this was 2016. So we did that walk. I couldn't stop thinking about it. I mean, at the time he was like, listen, what we're doing is Newport is a German owned company. They really want investments in the US. We're starting here in South Downtown. And I can tell you about all the reasons. But he said, we are aiming to buy 50% of the privately held buildings in this area, about 10 blocks. And we really want to jumpstart this neighborhood again and make it what it deserves to be and what it was when Atlanta began. So I just couldn't stop thinking about it. I kind of went deep into the history books. I just like engulfed myself in placemaking and neighborhoods and historic preservation and just continued to send him ideas over the course of the next couple months. And at some point, I either wore him down or was enough of good ideas where he just said, hey, we want to meet with you again. And so I think it was at that time that they realized this is a really non-traditional real estate project. It is buying, we bought 48 buildings, which is about 800,000 square feet of existing buildings, most of them historic by age. A good amount of them, like beautifully historic. We just never realize it, right?
Because and what were the things that were housed there?
Mostly nothing. So when we bought it, I want to say, I should actually go back and look at the exact percentage, but we were probably right around 30% occupied. So majority of our buildings were empty.
But what were they before that? Like, what companies or what things?
So Rich's department store got its start on Peachtree Street.
Okay.
Out of that Rich's department store, Haverty's started in one of our buildings. It was huge garment district. So think like shoe stores, clothing stores. I mean, this was the shopping district of Atlanta, if you could imagine, in the late 1800s, early 1900s.
Right.
I mean, it's where the trains intersected, and that's how people got around back then.
Right. Well, that's what Five Points.
It's where Five Points, yeah.
Right.
And underground Atlanta really was like State Square. So that's where. Right.
This is big Five Points, listeners, not little Five Points.
The big Five Points. So I just bought into the vision and, was really excited about what they were trying to do for Atlanta. I'm from here. So. I came to field trips to Underground Atlanta.
Well, I want to pull up a map here because I have a lot of questions.
Okay.
I have a lot of questions. So when I was a young man in Cobb County, it was a very different Atlanta, right? In the 80s, by the way.
Yeah.
I assume you grew up when I did in the 80s?
Yes,
what year? What year did you graduate?
99.
Okay. Not quite as much as I did. I graduated in 90. Okay. So I grew up in the real 80s, bro. All right.
I was like crawling in the 80s.
Right. You were crawling in the 80s. It's funny because everybody thinks they grew up in the greatest time for music. But anytime I listen to like 80s like stations, I'm like, this was clearly the greatest time for and movies. Right. Like if you look at the movies that came out like in 88, 89, it's like unbelievable.
The best.
Right. So anyhow, so it was like basically. White people did not come to downtown unless there was a concert. We certainly never got on MARTA unless it was a concert or a football game, right? So I moved back. I go to Boston for 3 years. I go to LA for 7. I come back here and
Do you know why all that happened, by the way?
What, white flight?
Yeah. You get it.
Because it happened in every city.
Happened in every city. Yeah.
White people were like, we're moving out to the suburbs buying a house.
Right. They were like, Black people were starting to be allowed in places that white people were being allowed. And white people were like, nope, not in for it. We're going to go.
Right. So growing up in the 80s, white flight had basically just happened in the 60s and 70s. This like American dream of like having an affordable house and blah, blah, blah. And starting then, like starting in like, late 80s, early 90s, it was like every city was like, we're going to bring downtown back. Right. I audio audience. I just did the like. What is that? What do you call this? The
Attaboy.
Attaboy. Aw, shucks. Like every city was like, we're going to bring downtown back. Mm-hmm. And so when I moved back, And the only place people ever went was like Buckhead. People were like, I've been to Atlanta. Do you know Buckhead? Like, and that was it. Mm. So when I moved back in 05, 07, now like these neighborhoods started popping, mm-hmm. right? Yep. Like, ooh, like Inman Park and Reynoldstown, these cool areas, right? And this is before, like, you know, before the Beltline and Ponce City Market, right?
Yep.
So then, like, I could, so I was involved in the events world, right? So that's how I know Charleston. And so, like, we staffed events. And when I went to the big ACVB events, like, like in 05, 06, and they were, like, still talking about, like, Centennial Park as, like, the only draw. Like, Centennial Park and the aquarium. I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, what, I left here 10 years ago. That was the thing.
That was the only thing you were talking about. Yeah.
So, anyhow. So, and then so in the last 10 years, 15 years, like, has been massive, right? Movie industry, all these neighborhoods can't even walk on the Beltline on the weekends now, right? And when the Beltline first started kind of filling in a little bit, it was like, oh, cool, there's a place to walk and there's a bar and there's a restaurant. But now, like, there are condos, like, everywhere you turn, everywhere you turn. So I was going to look at the map, but I guess we don't need to. My question is, like, you keep revitalizing these areas. I don't know where these people are coming from or how they're going to be occupied. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
Because if wherever there was an old building, they've stuck some high rise or some, you know, somebody just shared a picture yesterday of the, remember when the Domino's and the Checkers were over here?
I saw that.
And I was like, oh my God, I remember that.
Is that ETL Urbanist?
Probably.
Darren Givens, yeah.
Oh, you know them?
I mean, I know him.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. Shout out ATL or British.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, all that stuff's gone. So my question is, you want to keep revitalizing these areas. Oh, and so when I first came back, I remember they were like, oh, we're going to build more stuff on Lucky Street. Like when I first came back. Right. And so there's a few things there now. Mm-hmm. Right. And so the Hall of Fame is there now. And,
like all of the Max Lager's pizza, like all that, right?
Right.
Restaurant Row, is that what they call it right there?
So like that, and now there is, and when you do see like tourists walking around, which you never saw when I was a kid, you never saw tourists walking around. And I remember, it's funny, I told my wife that because we went on a date and I forget where we went, but we were walking around and there were like tourists. And I said to her, honey, you would never see this. Like they were going to the... whatever, I'm trying to think, you know.
State Farm Arena or like, and then going.
But not, I'm saying not the arena. They were going to like the little restaurants like around the corner and stuff.
Yeah.
Like you could just, you tell they were tourists, like walking inside Centennial Park.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a thing. So anyway, how many areas can we revitalize and still have occupancy and still have traffic and all the rest of it? That's kind of my question for if you're like, okay, now, because the other thing is West Midtown, right? That became a thing.
Oh yeah.
Right. And now that's a whole thing. And they're trying to call it whatchamacallit, which I won't allow.
Upper West Side.
Yeah, not gonna happen. Not gonna happen. We don't have that. Sorry. All this stuff. So now you can answer your question. That. Now that I've set you up with a big fat softball.
Yeah. Thanks.
Of what the hell you're doing?
What are we doing? So interesting about the name. I will say one of the first.
Sweating. I'm gonna take off my sweatshirt while you talk.
Yeah, go for it. One of the first things we did when I came on board was, you know, try to create an identity for South Downtown. Like, what is it that we're trying to do? What is the neighborhood we're trying to bring back? And one of the first parts of bringing back that identity was the name. What do we want to call it? You know, some developments have these very specific names. Atlantic Station, West Midtown, Summerhill, Inman Park. So these neighborhoods have names, and we were trying to figure out, do we want to create our own name, or is it South Downtown, or what do we do? So we polled the people that were there.
Okay.
Residents, tenants, people who, while not impressive by numbers, incredibly passionate about the potential of the neighborhood. They're all like, we don't need a new name. We have a name. It's South Downtown.
Right.
So we ran with it. We were like, that's what we're calling it. It's the only name we're going to have. We don't own it all, so we are very inclusive of other
property. Do you have a logo?
We have an S that we use.
With a D and a T? Do you have presents for me? Because you should give those first.
Hold on. I'm going to...
Because then I get... You should lavish me with gifts.
I'm going to pull out something if I can find it in here. So we have an S that...
I like it. Okay. I've been handled a water bottle, which I'm hoping has money inside. And it's a pretty sweet S. I like it. And we lose the vowels in downtown because that's super hip, right?
Yeah. We had to create something that was at least a little bit unique for us.
Okay.
And what we've tried to do is that S, and there are about 65 other S's that we use. They're all like really drawn from the neighborhood.
65 other S's?
Yeah, it's just an S. So okay. A new business comes in the neighborhood and they have an S, like why not add an S? We're not trying to control it. We're just trying to help the neighborhood identify collectively with something.
Right.
So that's South Downtown. That's why we call it South Downtown, to your point about Upper West Side. To answer your question.
But I'm okay with South Downtown. I'm not down with Upper West Side. Upper West Side is in New York, and that's what people know as Upper West Side. Like, it's just kind of a thing.
Right. To me, that is a created neighborhood. South Downtown, we didn't create.
It already exists.
It already existed.
Right. It's like, so I live in the West End, or did, right? And that's just, it is the West End.
Yeah.
Now, here's what's funny. When I moved there in 15, people thought I meant West Midtown. They'd be like, oh, I love that neighborhood. And I'm like, you don't know where it is. And then the breweries came in, and now everybody knows where that is. That's how Run the ATL was born, sort of, was that I was running behind
there. On the
Beltline
right there.
Well, it wasn't the Beltline. It was dirt.
Right.
And I ran into my friend, and he said, why don't we do this crazy thing? Or he said, let's do this thing. And I said, I bet we could put a race on. And I just like threw on Eventbrite, and the rest is history. But now we move 2.5 miles down the road, which – if you leave our neighborhood, if you leave our street and take a right, the sign says East Point, but we don't live in East Point, so I don't know where we live.
I was going to say.
It could be East Point. It could be, what's the other name? Not Westview, but there's another kind of nice name. I forget it. Anyhow, that's where I live now.
Okay. Okay. I live in East Atlanta.
Okay.
So I'm, you know, like in the village.
Right.
And then before that, in 08, I lived in Inman Park, back before it was Inman Park. I think I was in the only apartment building that Inman Park had back then. They had just started building those like massive houses right behind it.
So when I see all these things going up and all these areas you're talking about, all these neighborhoods, so Summerhill is a great example, right? Like I hadn't been there in a while. And so I drove through. And so again, when I grew up, there was Atlanta Fulton County Stadium. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And they kept talking about how let's revitalize that. Let's make that a thing. So then they build Turner Field,
mm-hmm.
other things that goes, I don't know how to speak anymore. And let's make it cool and happening. And they never did. Right. And then the Braves left. Mm-hmm. Right. And so Georgia State plays there now, but now there's some condos, there's a couple little restaurants. And so again, when I see all these things, I'm like, our population isn't going up 20%. Like, where are these people coming from?
But it is. The population growth of Atlanta is, I'll deliver you some stats. Maybe while
are they made up?
Here. No. But our population growth is on a trajectory where we don't have supply in the pipeline to meet the demand of what's coming to the metro area.
You've got to be kidding me.
I'm not kidding you. From a residential standpoint. We do not have the supply right now to keep up. Part of that was just growth of Atlanta in general. I think a big part of that is COVID influenced. People are now migrating to Sunbelt, southern areas. I think our diversity and the amount of attention we're getting with the historic black colleges that we have here is driving more headquarters, Microsoft, Visa, Google, several that have been announced recently. And so I think all of that is culminating into like our growth is just projected to be incredible. And so what we're seeing is actually we're providing solutions to what will be potential real issues because we are building more residential. We're providing walkable, livable, inclusive neighborhoods next to transit and next, you know, really easy commute to get to Midtown or Buckhead or on transit.
All right. So, well, let's talk about ugly stuff, right?
Yeah.
If I get off MARTA Five Points,
uh-huh.
I see a whole lot of homeless people.
Yep.
Right. Live in the park.
Mm-hmm.
What are our thoughts there?
So I think the park has its own challenges. I think, you know, for South Downtown, what we're faced with is empty buildings, closed, boarded up windows, and vacant storefronts. That's what we're trying to change. By changing that, there will be less of a comfortable environment for folks to hang out and places for people to sleep at night. So our answer is we need to make it active again. It just hasn't been active in 25 years. So as we revitalize these buildings and put new tenants in them, our focus is going to be, how do we make it feel safe? That's number one. How do we make sure it's safe for people visiting and people working down here? But number two, not just displacing the people who call those streets home, but how do we make sure that what we're doing, we just need to activate the streets. I lost my train of thought.
It's okay.
For a minute.
No, and I can understand that because I watched that happen in the West End. We actually moved to Kirkwood in like right before it kind of popped, and people who lived there a while were like, oh my God, it used to be really bad. And then we moved to the West End, and there's a park across the street, Rose Circle Park, which we thought was great because our kids were little, but it's also where homeless people gather and a lot of people smoke pot. And, you know, like
East Atlanta has one of those.
What's that?
I said East Atlanta has one of those parks.
Right. And so it's gotten somewhat better as more people come in. But there's still some.
Yeah. I mean, I think homelessness is just, it's a huge challenge in all downtowns, right? So if you plan on living or working downtown, midtown, you're going to deal with, you know, and interact with homeless population. I think we have great resources in Atlanta, and they're only getting better for how do we address it? How do we solve for it? How do we provide housing and services around those people? Downtown specifically has like a great program called Assist, where they have social workers who are on the streets every day, making relationships with those people and trying to help find them permanent solutions. But at the end of the day, some of those people don't want solutions.
Correct.
So I think there's an inherent, there's going to be unhoused people in downtown.
So I get the part about, listen, we're just going to build it an activity around people don't want to be it right. I get that part. But do you, as a company, who do you like work with for that? Because the police are not, I used to think that like, oh, the police's job is to kick those people out. And it's not. Mm-hmm. They have to be fair to everybody. Like the park is technically open from 8 a.m. to midnight or whatever it is. That's what I've learned when I've asked them to please get rid of the people sleeping across the street from my house.
Mm-hmm.
So who do you work with? What agencies or?
So we do work with APD because they are, while there are rights to those people who are sleeping in parks, they are not allowed to sleep on our doorsteps, which is private property. And so we do have a great relationship with them. They are trained to work with that population versus criminals. And so there are specific things that they do. It's not that they just arrest them or, you know, they do try to help solve. And then there's programs like Hope Atlanta and the Assist program I mentioned that we are just very familiar with. So anytime we see someone that might need help or we, you know, we're uncomfortable and we can't deal with them, we make those phone calls and call in support for those people. But I think it's a community effort. I mean, downtown stakeholders meet fairly often trying to think through solutions for how we as a business community and property owners and downtown business district, how do we help that problem?
Can we get rid of the silly trolley and build something useful?
That's a little bit outside of our scope as a private developer. I'll say what we're trying to focus on is walkability, which I mentioned. So our main streets that our buildings sit on are Peachtree, Broad Street, Mitchell, and MLK. And so we have undergone studies for those four streets trying to kind of reclaim some of that those lanes, car lanes for pedestrians, widening sidewalks, providing outdoor dining opportunities. And so we're really focused on the environment of the people walking down there because we're downtown. It should feel really good to get off Five Points MARTA station and walk around. I do think MARTA has some plans for some alternative transportation. They're calling it the bus rapid transit. I'm not sure if you've heard about it, but it's a line that would run buses, rapid buses from Peoplestown on the south part of the Beltline, all the way through our neighborhood in South Downtown. And so I do think that's an alternative transit solution that they're looking into. There's some funding behind it. And so we're trying to be good partners and help them think through the best way to do that while also accomplishing our goals of walkability. So I'm hopeful that if that moves forward, it's different than the trolley project and the success looks different than the trolley project. But that's one of the things we're trying to ensure with MART is that they're thinking through all the parts of it that are really important to the South Downtown neighborhood, us and other stakeholders.
So the current project, right?
You're talking about the streetcar?
No. Okay. So just want to make sure you agree that that was silly, and you do. So you're okay. You can stay for the rest of the interview. So the current thing is, hey, we're trying a few things, right? You don't know what I'm talking about? Like if you go out, if you leave this building.
Oh, yes. The Peachtree Shared Space.
You'll see a sign.
Yep.
Right. Okay. So why don't you explain what that is and then talk to me about that.
So we were not involved in this Peachtree Shared Space, but it is a project with the Atlanta City Studio, which is an arm of the Department of City Planning. And their job is really to help Atlanta think differently about design of public spaces and buildings and, just the things that make a city great. When you go visit downtown Denver, like, why does it feel great? That's their job, is to help Atlanta be a great downtown. So they've done a lot of incredible work. One of the ideas they've had for a long time is creating shared space on Peachtree Street. And it's been done successfully in other cities, but it's where essentially, cars, bikes, people all share space. It lessens the speed for cars, which is safer for everybody. It provides bikes and people more space to get around. And so they took, I think, 3 blocks of Peachtree and created like a test project just to see how it impacted traffic and how it impacted businesses along that stretch. On our site of Peachtree Street, we're really focused on just reducing car traffic. And so we've already done that. It was 2 lanes in each direction. We've taken it down to 1 lane in each direction, provided some on-street parking, which is great for retail. And again, kind of just makes the pedestrian experience feel better.
Do you go down to the gulch?
Yeah, we're right next to the gulch. So
side
by side.
So they've been working on whatever they're working on there.
They're doing great work.
What is happening?
So they...
Site of many Marvel movies shooting things, if you pay attention to that stuff.
Yes. So the Gulch is a $5 billion project. Yep. That's B, billion.
Jeez
And they are off to a crazy start. So it took them a little while to get here because it's a huge deal. But they had 2 existing buildings that were the original Southern Railways, Norfolk Southern headquarters. They've converted those into 162 lofts. And are working on 80,000 square feet of office. They've signed a brewery that's going to come to that retail of those buildings, but that's the first delivery. So the residential units delivered this summer, and the office will deliver early this year. Right behind those buildings, they just submitted for permitting on their first ground-up residential project, which will be about 230 units. And then they have another residential, another office. But it's going to be, call it 2,500 to 5,000 new apartments. I mean, hundreds of thousands of square feet in office product and then retail.
But like right now, the road, like, is that ever going to be fixed? Right now, you have to kind of go around.
The road is not the gulch, nor is it us. The road is the city.
Got it.
So there was they had to redo some of the viaduct level concrete. I might be saying this totally wrong, but from what I know, they had to redo some of the concrete pillars in the viaduct level. They did it once. The concrete was bad. I feel like it was porous or something like that. I'm probably saying this really wrong. And so they had to do it over again. So it was supposed to be, a year and a half long project, and it's taken like 3.5.
Right. So from someone who works in this building and has for a few months now, I think the things work. Basically, they put plants and bikes where cars used to go. And so I'm going to walk down the street to go to the Dunkin' Donuts. Then it feels relatively safe because it's, what I mean?
You just have more space.
Yeah, it doesn't. So you guys, you've already started that part?
We have. On Peachtree Street, we've started. On our section of Peachtree, which is between Alabama and Mitchell Street.
Right.
We've already started that down there. The permanent changes will happen in 2024, something like that. But right now it's painted in a tactical way like they did downstairs or on Peachtree Street outside. And then Mitchell and MLK, we have grand plans for doing the same, kind of reclaiming some car lanes for outdoor dining,
right.
Street trees.
Will there be, what's the word, incentives? Let's say someone like me, right? I'm like, oh, I want to, like right now I have an office here, right?
Mm-hmm.
That I'm going to kind of convert to like podcast studio, right? Like I've been here a couple months. I'm sort of debating how much I'm going to do with that because I can easily just come down here, but
yeah.
I'd like to maybe convert it all in there and like, oh, well, if you give me an incentive, I'll move into your building.
Mm-hmm. So I think our natural incentive is that we are just affordable.
Okay.
Right? South Downtown is affordable when compared to most other markets right now.
Right.
That's retail, office. It will be for residential. I mean, certainly the case study that the Gulch developers, they're called CIM, the case study that they've just proven with their apartments coming online was pretty strong. They got some pretty good rents. So we'll use that data and, you know, but we will inherently be affordable in the neighborhood just because we're just getting our start. Like the neighborhood has yet to rebound. We
right.
are just starting to write its next chapter. And we know that we're going to need to be really flexible with tenants who want to be a part of that chapter and that story, making sure that they're set up for success.
So what's the month, you would say, ETA, that I could like look at a space and be like, oh, like I don't need that much?
So you could come and look at a space that's almost ready
okay.
for tenant turnover. So ours are all first, what we call first-generation spaces, which means that we have put in all new systems, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, flooring, but the tenant needs to build out the rest, right? You would need to put in your overhead lighting, your drop ceilings, because we don't know how you want the space to feel.
Right.
So I could show you that space.
Okay.
Week. And it should deliver to tenants for build out. We have a couple office leases signed, and they'll start building out probably April.
Cause I'll show you what I have here and we can
yeah,
chat.
That would be great. And for, you know, you would be able to, the exciting part for me, I've been a part of this team for 4.5 years. I can confidently say that this year, like this calendar year, we will have new tenants open along one of our streets called Hotel Row. And that is, you know, we've had incredible success signing retail tenants. We have a great group.
Who's coming?
I was just going to say, we have a great group called How Crispy. They also have a location in Summerhill, but it's a couple of guys who are mastering the fried chicken sandwich.
Okay.
And crispy chicken nuggets.
Okay.
We have another group that's doing Pizza by the Square, and they actually have this really amazing underground cocktail bar. Called 13th Floor, and it is all kind of centered. I mean, it's tiny. It's 1,400 square feet, but it is centered around this mural we uncovered when we purchased the building. That's of Outkast and the AT Aliens album cover.
Nice.
We don't know who did the artwork, but it's beautiful.
I could find out for you.
I'll send you the photo if you can help find out. We've put on.
Do you know who Dr. Dax is?
I do know who Dr. I mean, I don't know him personally.
Okay.
But
I do.
Okay.
I interviewed him. He's amazing. And he knows everybody, and I would almost guarantee you he would know who did it. Send me a picture of it.
I'll send you a picture.
And I will text him while we're talking, when we're done, and I'll be like,
okay,
who did this? He'd be like, oh, shoot, that's because he's with the Dungeon family and all that
stuff.
The
interesting part about that building is that when we bought it, it was a barbershop on the top floor, and this was definitely being run as like an underground, shady, illegal club. So the mural was beautiful, but everything else we found on there was not so beautiful.
Right.
So at least we preserved the mural.
I almost would guarantee you he knows who did it.
Okay, great.
He probably partnered at that space.
So excited about that, because I do think that type of feeling, low drop ceilings, really cool graffitied artwork, like Atlanta doesn't have a lot of that. And what is more Atlanta than Outkast?
What is more Atlanta than Outkast? How about having a mayor named Dre?
that's pretty awesome. And so we have those two coming to the street. We are talking to a local coffee operator, talking to a great group around a Thai concept. Across the street at our biggest building, 222 Mitchell, we have a group called Pins Mechanical. It's kind of one of those adult playground things. It's 25,000 square feet, duck pin bowling, classic arcade games. We'll be the only destination like that in downtown for sure. So we're excited about them. And then the group that's operating the rooftop at Ponce City Market, Slater Hospitality, they're operating our rooftop at that building. So It's about 8 floors up. It's got killer views of Mercedes-Benz Stadium and the Capitol building. And so they're going to bring a really cool modern diner and then a cocktail lounge to the roof.
Cool. So question, these big German real estate people.
Mm-hmm.
Real estate has ups and downs, right? And when you're caught in a crash or a downtime, right? You got empty stuff everywhere, stuff half built. And it's not if, it's when, right? It's like
cycles.
Right.
Yeah.
So how does a company like that operate? Just like, it's like we just bought a house and it's like the market's high right now. Do we wait or is it just going to keep going up? Right. So I guess, how do they look to the future? How do they look to the future? Knowing that there's going to be at some point, it might not have to be 08 bad, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I mean, certainly this pandemic has been a dip in the cycle. So, I think that's what it is.
But not really, because the houses were like, we wanted to stay in the West End.
Aside.
The West End, we couldn't stay in for family of, we wanted, you know, we have a 5-bedroom. We moved down to a 3 because it's, we had to go 2 miles away because it's still like jumped.
Yeah.
Even right out of the pandemic. So, anyway.
Residential market aside, because most of what we purchased is commercial.
Okay.
So residential aside, we believe that it is all cyclical. So it's going to go up and down. I think there are things that you can do to help prepare for that. And some of those things on our side are taking our time. So we have 48 buildings. We're not renovating all 48 today so that they all deliver on the same day next year. We are taking our time. We're delivering one block and then the next block and then the next block. And part of that hopefully reflects just organic growth of a city that you would naturally see, even if one owner didn't own all these buildings. So we think that's going to set us up for success because we can respond. I mean, even during the midst of COVID, we were in the middle of designing our big office building and we were able to make some changes based on what we were seeing from, you know, this pandemic of what was important to office users. And we added more elevators, we added more touchless features. So I think the slow build is going to set us up for success. I think the other thing is that we are affordable and we're currently attracting people who, again, believe in the vision of South Downtown. They love the historic nature of the buildings because they're unlike anything Atlanta has to offer anywhere else, in my opinion. Humble opinion. But they really appreciate those things that you can't build new.
Have you been approached by WeWork or Switchyards as those people to put any of that stuff in there?
We have certainly had had conversations about co-working spaces, and we're actually have a meeting this afternoon with one.
Okay.
So hopeful to bring in a flex workspace into that bigger building, 222 Mitchell.
Okay.
Yep.
Right. So I did co-working the last however many years. I've gone to some different places. And it's been great because that's all I need is really a desk and I can pop into a conference room and do my thing.
Yeah.
But I record a lot of, you know, video intros and intros for my podcast. And eventually, like, I didn't want to have to move stuff. I wanted to just have my own. And that's why I ended up here.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm curious if I can do it even more affordably now that I've discovered, like, oh, I can easily take the train to work.
Yeah.
Because I have 2 stations right near me, right? I have, I used to be able to walk to West End Station. I would come on my flight sometimes and just not wait for a lift. I'd just get on the train. So now it's next to Oakland City. And it's literally, I think it's 6 minutes from the West End Station to here. So it's maybe it's 9 minutes to that one. So certainly as quick as driving.
Certainly.
Right?
Yep. Yep. I know transit. I wish there was more, and I think MARTA is putting a lot of thought into this, but I wish buses were a bit more accessible.
Yeah,
to people.
Buses are not a thing in Atlanta. Like, yeah, they maybe start to figure out MARTA once they've gone to a couple of events and they go, oh, this is kind of doable.
Right.
But yeah, we're not.
But you're still parking at a station to go to take MARTA.
Yeah, we're not.
I wish I could hop on my local bus
right,
and go to the
station. Which happens in every major city except ours. Yeah.
Yeah. So they still have some work to do.
Right.
But Atlantans also need to be a little bit willing to adapt, right? I mean, we're all kind of stuck in this car-centric mode. that it's going to take us trying it and figuring out new routines in order to really make it work.
Well, I mean, it wasn't even like in the scope of possibility like 20 years ago. Now you have young people who move down by the Beltline and do walk everywhere.
Do walk everywhere, yep.
So like absolutely. At least it's starting to be a possibility.
It is. And with the migration of during COVID, with more and more people moving into the city from New York, Boston,
right,
places that have public transit. I mean, we had several tenants. So there's a couple condo buildings in South Downtown, and several residents moved in during COVID from New York or Boston. They didn't bring a car.
Right.
We didn't have a car coming from New York. So why was I going to buy a car coming to Atlanta? They just picked a location that was close to public transit where they knew they could get to their jobs. I think they're just hopeful that we can help create some things like grocery stores and opportunities to fill daily needs so it feels more like a neighborhood for them.
Right. All right. Well, I always like to finish by asking people some Atlanta favorites.
Ooh.
Are you ready?
Yeah. Are they food oriented? Because I'm really good at that.
Okay. Well, there's no good or bad.
Okay.
There only is.
Okay.
There's no judgment.
Thanks for taking the pressure off.
Okay. What is your go-to order when you go to the Waffle House?
Oh, it's the All-Star Special for sure. It's scrambled eggs with cheese, crispy bacon, wheat toast, sometimes cinnamon raisin, depending on my kids, hash browns.
Okay. How do you take your hash browns?
Just plain. Salt and pepper.
Just plain.
Just plain. I know.
What's wrong with you?
Because they're so good.
Call yourself an ATL. And do you know you can get them steamed to get them quote unquote healthier?
No, I did not know that.
Try that sometime.
Are they as good? The crispy is what gets me.
I'm just saying, if you're feeling healthy, you can get them steamed.
You don't go to Waffle House if you're feeling healthy.
Let's say you're doing a thing where you're like, hey, I'm training for this big race, and I'm really just eating clean as I can, and your friend takes you to the Waffle House. You're like, you know what? I'm going to have the steamed hash browns. Just throwing it out there.
I will say there's a Waffle House in Glenwood Park. We live in East Atlanta, and so it makes us feel better. We'll walk to Waffle House and walk home.
Yeah, you walk the calories right off.
That's right.
I've been to that one many times.
Yeah.
So I made a dream list when I started this show, and Roger's family of the Waffle House was on that list, and I finally talked to Joe Jr., you should listen to that episode. I
listened to part of it.
Oh, part of it. Mm-hmm. Were you like, I want to find out who this guy is?
No, I was, yes, I was trying to understand your interview style, and so I hopped around to several. I also really love the one, is her name Missy?
Yes, I just interviewed her. She's the best.
Yeah, that was really interesting.
Yeah. So, but Joe is like, all right, we are now on the voice app. Because the card filled up and it's being wacky and I don't want to go upstairs again. And I want to say that we could try to recreate the magic of those answers, but it will never happen. It just won't.
It just won't. It's okay.
We did the quiz. We did finish the Atlanta favorites quiz. It was amazing.
To Banshee is the point of
yes,
the story.
That definitely came up. Yep. Definitely. That was super duper important. So the final question is, who should I have next on the Atlanta podcast?
Well, let me ask, do you enjoy like to learn about real estate development in downtown since you're downtown?
I mean, I can't say that's like at the top of my list.
Okay.
I like to talk to engaging guests.
Okay.
And I had to be honest, I wasn't sure where you were going to fall. Like, okay, this could be, some people think this is like a PR, like a press release, and that's not what I'm down for.
Absolutely.
And they don't know what a podcast is.
I listen to a lot of them.
No, you were a great guest. Oh, so that's what I want. So okay. So if they work real estate or not, if they're engaging, 100%.
Okay. Yes. So I'm going to give you not real estate focus. There is a guy who actually has a nonprofit in the West End called Plywood People. Are you familiar?
Yeah, they live they're across the street from me.
Yeah, right by Monday Night.
Right.
So Jeff Schinnebarger is the founder of Plywood.
Okay.
It's been in existence for 15 years. I'm on the board. Fascinating guy. So I would just say, like, he's a great guy. What he does down there and for Atlanta is like a beautiful, amazing thing. He will give you some great sound bites and like advice, and I think your listeners will get a lot out of that conversation. So he would be my number one.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is there a number two, or that's it?
If there's a number two, it would be a counterpart of ours over at CIM, so the group Developing the Gulch. I think it's such a huge project. It's really important.
No,
for
I'm interested in that.
So
if they're engaging,
the guy that I have in mind would do a great job having a conversation with you, and I think you should.
I might interview him in the gulch, like just standing there.
He would love that. Absolutely.
I'm not kidding.
He's down for it.
When it's not,
we should have done it in one of our buildings.
Yeah.
Next time.
Had you suggested that, I would have done it because I usually have people come to me mostly because they're too distracted in their own, right? I mean, people are usually pretty good, but it's almost impossible if someone's a business owner to not get interrupted at least once, right?
That's fair.
So I try to just get people out of their element. Mm-hmm. But an empty office space or a building is different than like you being in your office and the phone ring. I'm picking up a desk phone as if those exist anymore. Yeah. But all right, well, listen, thanks for coming on.
Yeah. Right. I'd love to do it again when we have things that I can talk about.
Yeah, exactly. So tell people where they can go to learn more about it.
Southdowntown.com. It's spelled wonky, South, D-W-N-T-N. And then Instagram, we have an amazing storytelling device there on Instagram, so definitely check out our Instagram account. A lot of history, a lot of posts about our construction and the progress we're making, new tenant announcements.
You do not stop getting texts.
Definitely. Well, it's okay. I'm focused here. You're focused on.
No, I'm sorry. I'm very ADD, so like I'm like, man, she's getting a lot of notifications.
No, but I would definitely recommend following.